joining us now to talk about that and some other things, because I don't want this to all be sad, but I really would like it to be more of a celebration of Terry Holland. Anyway, another great gentleman, David Teal, Richmond Times-Dispatch. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Adam. It is a, it's kind of a poignant day. Terry meant a lot to an awful lot of folks, and I've known him for decades, and just sad.
Profoundly sad. I've met him obviously several times, and we spoke to him relatively often when he was the AD at East Carolina, since, you know, we share a market. We're actually being heard right now on 94.3 The Game in Greenville. So there's a lot of Pirates fans out there. Oh, did I say 94? I don't think there is 94. Maybe there is. Yeah, there is. It hits closer to home here for a lot of people. Sure. And he really was just an incredible gentleman. He was just, there was a class about him, and I'm not saying other guys aren't classy, but there was a class about him that it exuded from him.
It really did, Adam. Tony Bennett said this afternoon that there was just this peaceful feeling whenever you were around Coach Holland. And I think his players felt that warmth. Jeff Lamp has remarked that the minute he walked into the Holland home on his recruiting visit and saw Terry and Ann and their two daughters, he just felt like that was the place he needed to be. He said he had seen some unseemly sides of recruiting coming out of Kentucky, like he did, one of the most touted prospects in America. But he fell for the Hollands and that homespun family atmosphere.
I remember when David Teal from the Richmond Times-Dispatch is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I remember when he was the AD at East Carolina for a while. And ECU had gone through a bunch of years. They weren't really all that good in football. Their football had fallen off. And their non-conference schedule had gone the other way, where they were scheduling three or sometimes four very losable games against major conference teams in the non-conference. And I asked him about it. He goes, well, we're scheduling our bowl games. And there was just – that made a lot of sense, right? Like we're struggling to get back to where we are, where we want to be. So in the interim, we're going to give fans something exciting to have. And it wasn't like they were always on the road. All these teams came out there, whether it was South Carolina or Virginia Tech or West Virginia or, you know, State and Carolina. They all had to go there too. So it was just, he made a lot of sense as an AD. I don't know if it helped them win, but I'm sure it was really good at the box office. Who's the best Virginia basketball coach of all time, as we dumb this up before I ask you about actual basketball matters?
Well, Tony Bennett hung a national championship
right
banner. So I think you'd be hard-pressed to put anyone above Tony. But I'll tell you this, Adam. If Terry Holland had not come before him, Tony Bennett wouldn't have looked twice at the Virginia job.
That makes a lot of sense.
Terry Holland showed what was possible at Virginia.
Who knew? Like in football, the cradle of coaches, Miami of Ohio, where Bo Schembechler and Woody Hayes both coached. And I think, didn't Lou Holtz also coach there? Davidson gave us not only Terry Holland, gave us Lefty Driesell. And it also gave us Bob McKillop, who didn't leave Davidson. But I mean, what a lineage the basketball coaching position was at that place.
And then look at Terry's subsequent coaching tree: Dave Odom, Jim Larrañaga, who told me today that everything he is and everything he has accomplished as a head coach is a direct result of Terry and the lessons he learned under him as a UVA assistant. Jeff Jones, Rick Carlisle played for Terry at Virginia. And then, of course, coached the Dallas Mavericks to a world championship.
Yeah, it's a very good point about the coaches. So it brings me to this about Jim Larrañaga and Miami. Are they and Virginia essentially polar opposites? Like, Miami is a dynamite offensive team and not so great defensively. Virginia is very efficient offensively, although not as efficient as they've been in the past, but obviously a great defensive team. Are they the opposites, and which would you take right now in a steel cage match?
Right now, I take Miami. But Saturday's second half collapse against Florida State, notwithstanding. You know, Adam, in their first 24 games, Virginia shot under 40% twice. Cavaliers have been under 40% three consecutive games now. And it's gotten to be a mental block. And I lost count of how many shots at the rim UVA missed at the Smith Center.
Yeah, it was also against the team that had no real option. Like, North Carolina had to have that. And I think Virginia probably was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I'm not even going to make a recent Alabama men's basketball joke about that. David Teal, Richmond Times-Dispatch, at By David Teal on Twitter. So let me ask you this. Florida State obviously got a good win, and I still can't figure out why their program has been so bad this year. Their team has been so bad this year. I have so much respect for Leonard Hamilton and the job he has done. And part of me thinks that they're going to be a difficult team to beat in spite of their record. But their AD was in front of the Board of Trustees last week. And the stories that came out of that meeting are baffling to me in their incomplete nature. They're having a Q&A. And the AD basically just lets hang out there in the ether that, yeah, the buyout's $120 million. We can't allow us to fall behind $30 million a year, theoretically, to the University of Florida is probably who they're talking about, in terms of how much money we take in. And then they talk about, you know, what is the buyout so we could break even in 4 years? Like, do they know what the grant of rights is? What's going on there?
It's baffling, Adam, on several levels. Number one, you're talking about an AD in Mike Alford, who back in January went to that same board and spoke about how Florida State, not Wake Forest, not Duke, Florida State ranked near the bottom of the ACC, in football investment. That's a you problem.
Right.
That's an FSU problem. That's not the ACC's fault. It's not the ACC's fault that Florida State swung and missed badly on Willie Taggart. It's not the ACC's fault that Jimbo Fisher turned out to, in the long run, to be a fraud. And it's not the ACC's fault that Florida State has not invested its money wisely in its football program. And now all of a sudden, several weeks later, he's complaining about the same ACC revenue that Clemson receives and that Clemson has somehow, won two national championships and six college football playoff appearances. My message to Mr. Alford would be, how about you figure out how to beat Wake Forest in football before you start whining about ACC revenue?
You just went scoreboard on Florida State. I think that's hysterical. David Teal, Richmond Times-Dispatch is here on the Adam Gold Show. So it brings me to this, because I understand what he's ultimately getting at, though, and they want to compete with Florida, and there's all sorts of things that you can do with $30 million additional dollars per year. Although I do think that we should be able to make do at whatever the ACC's number is going to settle in at, let's just say $40 million, give or take, over time. We should be able to do well with that. But there's still, you would like to bridge the gap at least a little bit. You're not going to close it completely because the numbers for the SEC and the Big Ten are mammoth. But is there something that can happen between the ACC and the Pac-12, who I don't know what the lifespan is on that. Is there something that can happen between these two leagues that might put both in a better position?
Adam, I think everything hinges on what the Pac-12 does with its new media deal and what the Pac-12 does in terms of replacing USC and UCLA. Those moves have to happen first, and then I think the calculations might begin to see if there's something that in tandem the conferences might be able to do to gin up some media revenue.
I just don't know how you replace Southern Cal and UCLA if you're the Pac-12. I just don't see that. There's no, unless you add Notre Dame, which, I mean, we all understand it, you know, has its own challenges because they're part of the ACC and they're part of that grant of rights too. I just don't see how the Pac-12 replaces those two schools.
No, I mean, they'll replace them, but they won't replace their brain.
No.
San Diego State, SMU, whatever they end up doing, it's going to pale in comparison. And, you know, this notion of $120 million to leave the ACC, that's the exit fee.
Right.
I mean, when you talk about trying to leave the ACC right now in the grant of rights, we're talking, Adam, in excess of or almost $1 billion. and breaking news, neither the SEC nor the Big Ten need Florida State. And as valuable as FSU's football brand is, I don't believe for a minute that it's worth enough money annually to make either the Big Ten or the SEC whole by inviting them. It just, the math would not work.
Well, especially if they're not going to invest in their own football program. You know what would be best for Florida State? To win this league. That would be the best thing that Florida State could do. Win this league, and then they could go back. I mean, look, if their program was where it was in the Bobby Bowden era, which still one of the great runs that we have seen in modern college football history, if their program was in that level, they probably wouldn't be complaining as much. They probably would still be complaining, but that was a very naive conversation between Mike Alford and the Board of Trustees, and it was also incredibly incomplete. I messaged the writer on the story and just said, did anybody talk about grant of rights? Like, no. Okay. Well, that's a big miss right there. because it is, I mean, I haven't done the math, but if the SEC is going to pay out $80 million per school and Florida State thought they could go there and get $80 million a year, it's about a dozen years of $80 million. And the ACC would make out big time if Florida State did that. That's the way to get Clemson paid.
Yeah. No, and Adam, your point about Florida State winning the ACC is spot on. If you win the ACC in football starting in 2024, you will not only make the college football playoff, you will get, in all likelihood, you will get a first-round bye and be playing in the quarterfinals.
At home, maybe, eventually.
Yeah, well, right now you'd be playing in a bowl. But.
Right. But eventually I think we'll have quarterfinal games on home field. I think they're smart enough to recognize that home fields matter so much to college football. I think we'll ultimately be there. Maybe we'll always have the semis in neutral sites, but I think we'll ultimately have the quarters on home fields. David Teal, @ByDavidTeal on Twitter. You're the man. I appreciate your time. I'll see you a week from tomorrow in Greensboro.
Absolutely. Thank you, Adam.
Take care. David Teal.